When two podcasts collide, magic happens. Welcome to Dinner Party, the podcast where I bring together my two hit shows, Cookery by the Book and Decorating by the Book. Around here, we're all about cooking, sharing stories behind recipes, and creating a cozy home. I'm your host, Susie Chase, a West Village wife, mom, and home cook, inspired by Martha Stewart, trying to live in a Nora Ephron movie, surrounded by toile, plaid, cookbooks, decorating books, and magazines. Cooking in my galley kitchen and living my best life in my darling New York City apartment in the cutest neighborhood in the city, the West Village. So come hang out and let's get into the show.
Hi there, my name is Eddie Massey. I'm the owner of Eddie's Grocer in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, and I'm the author of Keep It Zesty, a Lebanese cookbook that brings you Eddie's Grocer to your kitchen.
I think I met you in October 2019 before the world locked down at a Sumac magazine event at Ludlow House. And I think you were catering it.
Yes. Now, I run the food and drink club at Soho House. So I had invited the guy that started Sumac, which I can't, Ali is his name. Yes, I had invited him to be the host that month. And that is where we met. Wow.
That's great, so great. Funny. That like the in the before times, before everything closed, it's like, I don't know. Could have happened. Maybe not. Who knows?
Yes. So now I remember that very well. Yes.
So in November 2022, I interviewed Hisham Asad. Do you know him?
Hisham Asad. Yes. Yes.
He wrote the cookbook, Beirut, the cookbook.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And we briefly chatted about the horrific explosion that demolished Beirut in 2020. And Hisham said, quote, I wrote about how, despite it all, and I don't want to be romanticizing our struggles, but despite it all, we find a way to grow. Just like the fig tree that grows out of the harshest environments, we find a place to put our roots back and grow tall. So before we get into the cookbook, I just want to give you a little space to talk about your home, Lebanon, because food is culture, culture is home, and home is our family.
It's been a hard week, I would say, with everything that's going on there. And I think as I grow older, I get more and more attached to Lebanon. And I think it's such a weird thing. But like when we moved here from Lebanon, I was like, I didn't really care as much about my culture, but I feel like now I'm so embedded in it and I care more than ever about it. And I think it's because I've learned how rich it is and how amazing of a culture it is. And it's really sad to watch how Western media showcases us and what we are as a culture. And I think for me, one of my biggest things has always been to spread the joy of Lebanese cooking. And that is to kind of take away that stigma of like a war-torn country and try to show how beautiful Beirut, Lebanon really is. And so I think, especially right now, you know, when I moved to the US in 2004, you know, there was the 2006 war, there was 2008 war, then there was the 2020 explosion and so many things in between. And now to watch Lebanon be again in the media in 2024 for yet another war, it really breaks my heart. It breaks my heart for my people and it breaks my heart for my country to be shown the way that it is. And I think with everything that I do, I try to show the good side of Lebanon because it's not just about war, but unfortunately, that is what is shown here. So to me, today, especially with things that have been going on in the past 2 weeks in Lebanon, I am prouder than ever to be Lebanese. And I'm also prouder than ever owning Eddie's Grocer here in New York to spread the joy of Lebanese cooking, but also to be able to support Middle Eastern-owned businesses. I think that, to me, is really the greatest achievement that I've done here is to be importing some great MENA-owned businesses. And especially now we've been working with more smaller businesses back in Lebanon. I think that is just, to me, the biggest thing that I could do here from being afar away. And just like you're just scrolling on Instagram and you're seeing all these horrible pictures and videos. And you're like, well, what can I do? And I feel like for me, this is what I could do here.
What could I do? What could we do?
I think what people can do is support small businesses or buy Middle Eastern owned businesses or like Middle Eastern products that are made there, I think at the end of the day, you're helping not just that business, but you're helping the farmers and like everything that goes into that. So I think that's one really big thing I would like to say. And I think outside of that, being reading more and not just reading one biased, you know, newspaper, watching one video and being like, this is what I'm going to take from it. I think really reading and understanding a bit more, like where this all stems from. This doesn't just start out of nowhere. This is hundreds of years that go into this. And I think outside of that, you know, of course, giving back, donating, and knowing where you're donating, like the Lebanese Red Cross. There's so many of these different homes and shelters that take in people. And I think, you know, either DMing them or donating straight to their website is the best way to do. I love Helm, H-E-L-M-M. I think I'm spelling them right, but they are a queer shelter in Beirut, and they take in queer kids that have been kicked out of their house. But especially right now with the displacement in South Lebanon, they're taking in any queer children or teenagers or adults. And I think those are the places to donate because they're really doing the most that they can out there.
Those are some good tips. Thank you. Thank you for speaking on this too. So moving on to lighter things. Yeah. So yeah. Much of your story has really touched my heart, but I think most of all is your neighborhood deli that's now Eddie's Grocer in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. It's just the most fabulous story. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Of course. You know, I've been living on this block now for 8 years, and I fell in love with Maria's Deli, which is what it used to be, a Polish deli, right when I moved onto the block. I used to go and get my turkey sandwiches from there. On Friday, she would do a fried fish sandwich. She made the best chicken cutlets. Oh, I miss that chicken cutlet sandwich. But I used to go in all the time, and I really became good friends with Maria. And after a while, you know, I would drop off like little snacks from catering events, and she would make me a big batch of coffee because I didn't have a big coffee machine for my catering. And we just became good friends. I mean, honestly, to me, she was like my grandmother on the block. It was just so sweet. And over the years, we just got to know each other better. And then when the pandemic happened, she closed down, and she was planning on reopening. But then, like, when things just kept getting worse and worse, she, you know, was ready to retire. So that is when I called her in May of 2020. And I was like, would you want to transition now? And she said yes. And that is when we kind of started working on things. And I signed the lease July 1st, and we got to work. We flipped the space in 6 weeks, which was, now that I think about it, 6 weeks is an insane amount of time, like so fast. But back then, because we had nothing else to do, it was just the perfect time, you know, perfect timing in a way. And so, yeah, we flipped it from a Polish deli that had been there for 43 years to a Lebanese grocer. And, you know, I think there's a lot of really cool history there. Like, you know, both Maria and I migrated from our own countries, but we were both immigrants. And she took over the deli when she was 25. I took it over when I was 25. Wow. We're both Sagittariuses. And I don't have any kids, but she had kids. So I think it's, there's a lot of like a lot of things that align there. And I think that's really beautiful because you really don't see that as much anymore, especially, you know, Greenpoint, Williamsburg, you've got all these like crazy real estate developers coming in, flipping these buildings. Commercial real estate is kind of like completely changing. I mean, we're getting a Sweet Green two blocks away, but you know, it's kind of like ever so changing, and it's not, you know, mom and pop being passed down anymore. And so I think there's something really beautiful about that.
So in the cookbook, you remind us that you're not our Lebanese grandmother. Talk a little bit about that. And I want you to talk about your grandmother, Odette.
I'm saying it to you straight to your face. I'm not your Lebanese grandmother, because I think a lot of Lebanese people would come into the grocer and be like, well, that's not how my grandmother made it, or that's not how my grandmother cooked it, or that's not how my mom made it. And like, I'm not your mom. I'm not your grandmother. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, nobody has time like our grandmothers did anymore to cook like they did. You know, they had all day long to plan, cook, and prep and do all that. We are in just such a fast-paced environment now, especially having a restaurant. You have to cut corners. So, you know, and the way I think about it is not just cutting corners, but also trying to make things last longer. So, like, our tabbouleh is made with kale instead of parsley. There's parsley in it, but it's not fully made of parsley because A, nobody has enough time to chop up all that parsley. Parsley wilts so fast that it will only last in the fridge for a day, where kale lasts in the fridge for 3 days. So it just had to make sense for us. So there's a lot of things that there's little shortcuts or things that I change up. Like also in the tabbouleh, we don't use bulgur, we use couscous because couscous holds up better and doesn't, like, the water doesn't really come out of it. It's a pasta. Where bulgur, you're kind of soaking it in water, and then sometimes a lot of water will come out of it later on in the process. So it just doesn't hold as well. So there's all these little things that I do to kind of prevent things from going bad faster, especially when it's all fresh food that we make. So that's what I have to say about that. And then, you know, my grandmother Odette, I love her so much. And she just taught me how to be in the kitchen overall. She taught me how to make kitchen and cooking part of life, part of, like, daily life. And I think she just put so much love in the food that she made every day. I mean, it was her full-time job and she really took it seriously. And it's become my full-time job and I take it very seriously as well. So I think I learned a lot from her. And I learned how to cook with the heart, with the eyes, with the nose, rather than, like, following a recipe, like tasting as I go, things like that. And of course, those are things that, like, you know, they try to teach you in college, but I think it's really truly embedded in you more than anything else.
And she did everything with a paralyzed left hand.
Yes. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Now I'm like, I don't know how she did that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was like paralyzed like this. So she could, like, hold it up. But this, like, the actual hand itself was not moving. And so now it's crazy to me because whenever I'm in the kitchen, I'm like, I wish I had an extra set of hands. Like, I wish I had four and not two. So I can't even imagine doing everything that she did with one hand. So especially chopping. And I mean, she used to chop so much, or, like, kind of like skewering kofta and things like that. It's like, you really need two hands for those things. So I'll never understand how she did all that.
So on the same day you got your driver's license, the Oprah Winfrey Show ended. I think we all have an Oprah quote at the ready. Mine is, doubt means don't. But yours is, surround yourself with only people who are going to lift you higher.
That is truly one of my favorite quotes from her, especially in New York, especially in this, like, social media age that we're in, especially in this, like, food creators, content, whatever you want to call it, world that we're living in now. I think that a lot of people are friends with each other on social media, but they're really, like, fake to each other in real life, or they don't actually mean well for each other. So I think there's something really big about that. And I think that we're all trying to make it some way, somehow. And so I think there's a lot of people that will, you know, throw you under the bus or do things that are not to help you out, but to kind of make them feel better about themselves. So I think it's all about people that want to lift you up. And I think, to me, I'm surrounded by some amazing people at the Grocer, especially my best friend Mila, who's our head chef at the Grocer. And I think, like, you know, I think there's a lot of jealousy nowadays, and a lot of people, like, every line cook and every sous chef really wants to be the head chef eventually and wants to become the name of it all. And so I think it's really nice to find people that are there to help you keep growing while they're growing themselves, but not trying to steal that name away.
So something I love about Lebanese cuisine are the spices. And you talk about how you were hard-pressed to find Lebanese representation in the food scene in New York. And the only Lebanese restaurant I know of in the city is one of my favorite restaurants. And I'm going to butcher this name. Ilili. I am obsessed with it. So in the cookbook, you talk about giving your spice cabinet a workout. And I'm curious about the spices you use most.
I mean, I think that's one thing that, like, when I moved to the U.S., I realized people just don't use spices. Now people use it a lot more than they used to. But I think it is really crazy. When I moved here, it was like salt and black pepper, especially in Boston. So I think that was really crazy to me. But in general, I used, you know, of course, a lot of za'atar, Aleppo pepper, sumac, cumin. I love cumin, cumin seeds and ground cumin. And then I would say outside of those four, shawarma seasoning, which is a mixture of different things, or baharat, which is our seven pepper spice mix. And to me, baharat is a very like wintry, like, you know, clove, coriander, cardamom, a little bit of cinnamon in there. So it's like more of a warmish spice. But I would think my top four would be Aleppo pepper, za'atar, sumac, and cumin. Yeah.
So in the cookbook, you write, grab the lactaid because who can live without labneh? What is your go-to to dip into labneh?
Chips.
What kind of chips?
I love like a potato chip. I love Cape Cod chips. I love a kettle chip. I love a Cape Cod chip, but this is gonna, people might get crazy with this, but I love Kirkland, aka Costco's brands, Himalayan salt chips. They're so good. And I like to warm them up for like a minute in like the air fryer or in the oven and then sprinkle some sumac on top to add a little zestiness to them. I mean, they're divine, truly divine. I would say that or just a plain old, good old Persian cucumber.
Tell me about your signature brown paper board.
The brown paper board is something that I started many moons ago now. And I know now like grazing tables are all over social media, but I started it literally totally by accident. I like showed up to a catering and I forgot to bring my platters. And my good friend Ross was a stylist on set. And he was like, oh, like I have brown paper, just throw it right on there. And I was like, oh my God. And I remember it was like a taco lunch. And I was like, are you sure? And he was like, just do it. And that's what I did. I put the flour tortillas down. I like had the rice and the chicken and stuff in the aluminums. And I put all the condiments and stuff around it, like the cheese and things like that, right on the board. And it worked. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have to bring platters anymore to catering. Like this is major. And because back in the days when I used to do breakfast and lunch catering for studios, I would go in the morning, set up breakfast, come back, do lunch, go back, set up lunch, come back, and then go back and pick up my platters and come back to drive Tribeca, Greenpoint, Tribeca, Greenpoint. So I'd go back and forth three times. And that is hellish. I mean, I was young, so like I could do it. I don't think I could do it now. And so it really like changed my life not to have to go back after lunch service, because not going back after lunch service was like the biggest thing, like to just keep going on the prep and doing all the dishes and stuff. And then you're cutting your dishes in half. And also in New York, you don't have enough space for all these platters and things. So it made things just much easier. But I think as I grew and started doing more and more cocktail parties and stuff, I felt like people at cocktail parties, even though the clients were spending so much money on the food, people were not like enjoying the food. They're eating the quick hors d'oeuvre really fast. And there just wasn't enough talk about the food. It was just drink, drink, drink. And so I was really excited to start doing these colorful brown paper boards because it A, brought people together around the table. It got people to talk about the food. Like, did you taste this? Did you taste that? And it made the food part of the event, which I felt like all these cocktail parties were like, the food was there, but it wasn't a moment. And I feel like me and other caterers work our asses off to put all this food together. And then you end up eating a few bites and just drinking the night away, where you should be enjoying the food. So I just wanted the food to be kind of the center of attention. And it started off like that. And it's been my thing ever since. I do like at least 4 to 5 brown paper boards a week. It's crazy.
Really?
Oh yeah.
And you trademarked it.
That took a lot of work.
But I bet.
It's crazy. Trademarking things is insane.
So over the weekend, I made a couple of your recipes. I made the orangey date carrot dip on page 49. And I'm always looking for a new dip to wow people. And this was literally restaurant level.
I love that. It's one of those dips that I came up with for like, you know, for fall purposes, you know, and it just stuck. I think the orange with the cumin and that like, and the carrot all just blend really well together. And it is like really having a fall dip, like just there for you.
And I think the trick is the date molasses. I don't think it would have been as good. Thank goodness I found the date molasses at my grocery store. But I think that's what makes it.
Yeah, I think it adds that nice sweetness to it.
And it's not maple syrup.
Not maple syrup. It's like a change of pace without having it be maple syrup. And I feel like date molasses is like, a tad bit sweet, but it's not crazy sweet. And because it's a molasses and thick, it kind of brings that dip together really nicely.
So next to the date molasses was rose water. And I was thinking, what do I do with this? But then I got home and I was reading your cookbook and you have a lot of recipes with rose water in it.
You know, rose water is something that I grew up with all the time and it is mainly used in sweets. I add it to a few things outside of sweets, like there's a ricotta with that in there with some honey and things like that. But, you know, rose water to a lot of people is kind of a beauty thing. It's not something to cook with, but, you know, you use it in moderation. It is floral, but it is, I think, to me, really delicious floral flavors. It's like using chamomile or jasmine in cooking. It's kind of the same thing.
And then I made your lemony chicken orzo soup on page 118. And that is like the perfect soup for any night. And you say this is your whole childhood in a bowl.
It really is, because nothing's like homemade chicken stock. Of course, you can use store-bought, don't get me wrong. But to me, like, homemade chicken stock is just the way to go. That is what I remember being in my grandmother's house, especially during the winter times. She always had chicken stock simmering. And, you know, I love a rotisserie chicken, and that's what I use in the cookbook. And love a rotisserie chicken. I could write a whole cookbook about rotisserie chicken. I like literally love rotisserie chicken. So I think that is the best thing to use for the soup. And I think it just makes it so much easier and of course more flavorful.
I love the lemon.
Acid in soup to me is major. And when I first moved to this country and started having soup, chicken soup especially, it didn't have lemon. I was like, what is it missing? Like, what is that thing? And then when my mom was like, gotta add lemon to this. And I was like, oh, it just changed soup for me forever.
I know. I grew up in Kansas and I didn't know I was missing the lemon in my chicken soup.
It just like really brightens it up, brings it together. And I also, what I like about that recipe is cooking the orzo separately. So cooking your pasta separately is major, major key to this.
Oh, I love it. I'm gonna make this all winter long.
Thank you.
And the dip too.
Dip is like, that's a go-to for sure.
Oh my God. I mean, I can't wait to make this for people. I made it for my husband and he was like, this is amazing.
Oh, I love that. Oh. That's great.
So you write in the cookbook, the burden of being bullied, of being called names, and the pressure to speak unaccented English all dissipated as I rolled out Pillsbury pie crust to make my own version of savory mini croissants. I believe to have an accent in the United States of America is one of the most courageous, smartest, and bravest things. But beyond your culinary achievements, you are a strong advocate for cultural representation and diversity in the culinary world. Can you chat a little bit about that?
Of course. I mean, I think to me, when I first moved to New York and I started working in kitchens, I mean, kitchens in general, it's weird because TV kitchens are like mainly like women and, you know, Food Network stars are mainly like women. But then you get into the kitchen in New York and it's all like heterosexual men that are like just nasty. And it's just that environment is kind of nasty in so many ways. I couldn't wait to get out of restaurant kitchens. I really, really couldn't wait. That's why I was really excited when I started catering, because A, I could be my own boss, but B, I think it was just like there was more fun to it and there isn't somebody behind you being like, why are you doing this way? Why are you doing that way? And there's hostility there as well, you know? And so I think to me, I'm always trying to advocate and also grow a family in our kitchen and at the grocer, we all accept each other no matter what. And I think that is really key and major. And I think just being vulnerable and caring, especially in a kitchen environment, because a kitchen environment on its own is so stressful. It's a lot all at once. You know, when we get a big rush, you're in the weeds, you're just like, it's all happening. And then it's like after that, reaffirmation or the recognition, but it's not for the people that eat it. It's more the recognition within the kitchen space of being like, well, that was a great service, like good job, or that was a great catering event, like thank you for all your help. And I think there just isn't that in the restaurant industry. And it's like, what's tomorrow's service? What do we have tomorrow on the books? What's going on tomorrow? How many numbers did we hit tonight? How many tables did we serve? How much tip did we make? And I think there's just that always that up and up and up. And so I think for me, all I care about is how are we doing right now? How are we doing as a team? How can we help each other out? And are we all mentally stable? I think the older generation missed, in a way, like that mental health aspect of things. And I think that's a huge thing right now in the restaurant world, is like being pushed mental health, mental health, mental health. And I think sometimes it has skipped a generation so much that it's hard to embed that into their brains this late into the game.
I feel like you're the next generation of food and hospitality.
I mean, I hope so. I've learned from the best. You know, I worked for Danny Myers for many years, and I always look up to him and everything that he's done. And I think there's only growth from here. I think one thing about him is, you know, making sure front of the house and back of the house is all equal. And there's just so much that goes into that. The next step here is to keep talking about mental health and not to just talk about, you know, this chef overdosed or this chef, you know, passed away because of this. I think talking a bit more about that and kind of making that become a topic in a way to make things better, not just like shunning that person for doing that.
So when life gives you lemons, you keep it zesty. That's what you say. Along with these gorgeous recipes, you have a lemonade chart. Talk a little bit about your love of lemonade.
Oh, I love lemonade. You know, in Lebanon, we have lemonade carts. There's a place that only sells lemonade. There's a place like that in Newport, Rhode Island, which I love. But I just love lemonade. Obviously, I love lemons. So lemonade is just so delicious. And I think in Lebanon, there's a variety of lemonade. And that's what I wanted to bring here to the book. There's a cucumber lemonade, a mint lemonade, I think there's a strawberry lemonade, blackberry lemonade.
Rose water
lemonade, of course. And you can always add a hint of vodka or tequila to it to make it a party. But I just think, to me, lemonade is like summer. You know, it's the most refreshing summer drink. It's tart. It's a little sweet, not too sweet. And it's just so refreshing and delicious. So, of course, I had to put that in the book. And I couldn't just do one lemonade. I was like, we got to add all the variations of lemonade that I love.
Did you see that video of the guy at San Gennaro? And he was... He was making lemonade from the fire hydrant water. Did you see that video? It's all over TikTok.
I don't know if I would drink that. I'm
no,
sorry.
No thanks.
Absolutely not. Fire hydrants, I feel like, are so like crusty on the inside. I would never, never. Oh, God. Oh,
yum. Okay. Now for my segment called The Perfect Bite, where I ask you to describe your perfect bite of your favorite dish.
Lately, it's been like a year plus, I've been obsessed with these savory oats. They're from James Park, one of my good friends, cookbook called Chili Crisp. And it's like savory oats with chili crisp. It's oats, chicken stock, chili crisp, a little soy sauce, a little miso. Cook it for like 4 to 5 minutes with some smoked salmon on top. I eat it at least three to four times a week.
Really?
It's like, I know. It's very weird. I love like a toast with Greek yogurt and smoked salmon, hard-boiled egg with smoked salmon, those oats with smoked salmon. I'm like a huge smoked salmon person.
I mean, I get all that, but the oats, that just sounds so weird. Can I say that?
No, it's totally fine. You can say that. I'm not a sweet gal whatsoever, like at all. So I will always pick savory over sweet. But I love that, like, I know people will think this is gross. I love like that mushiness of the oats and like the saltiness of it. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like almost, it's like eating porridge in a way. Yeah. But for me, it's so much better. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. I know it's not your perfect bite, but it's my perfect.
No, it might be. I'm going to try it. It might be my perfect bite.
Yeah.
So where can we find you in Brooklyn and on the web and social media?
You can find me at Eddie's Grocer. Everybody spells it like Edie. I call it Eddie. We are on the corner of Mesrall Avenue, not Street, and Eckford in Greenpoint off the Nassau G, or you can walk from the Bedford L. It's a quick 12-minute walk to McCarran Park. You can find me at Eddie Massey, EDYMASSIH, or EDYMASSIH.com.
Well, thank you so much, Eddie, for coming on Dinner Party Podcast.
Thank you.
I love this book so much.
Thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. So where can you listen to the new Dinner Party podcast series? Well, it's on Substack, susiechase.substack.com. You can also subscribe to Dinner Party for free on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Additionally, the episodes will be available on both Decorating by the Book and Cookery by the Book. Long story short, you'll be able to listen to it virtually everywhere. Thanks for listening. Bye.